Hey guys, it's Bobby Sylvester of the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast. I've got a quick message from the sponsor of today's show before we begin. I've been telling you about Draft. It's a DFS platform that I've been playing a lot lately because I love doing the snake draft every day to draft my team against everyone in my leagues. If you play daily fantasy, it's time for you to check out Draft. It only takes a few minutes to complete, and it's an absolute blast. You can play for free, play for real money, and get this, your chances of winning on Draft are almost 200% better than your chances of winning playing salary cap daily fantasy. Join me for my next draft by joining Draft now. Just type in Draft in the App Store or on Google Play, and it's going to come up first. Be sure to enter the promo code FANTASYPROS when you sign up, and you're going to 100% deposit bonus. Again, that's Draft in the App Store, and be sure to enter the promo code FANTASYPROS, all one word. All right, on to some fantasy baseball. Guys, thanks for listening to another episode of the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast. I'm Bobby Sylvester, and the Reds are off to a blistering start, and Cody Bellinger is knocking on the door for a big league job. Today, I'm joined by Fantasy Pros featured writer Chris Bragg to chat. Hey, Chris, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, Bobby, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. Chris, this afternoon, I went on a date with my wife, and I wanted steak. She wanted to see Beauty and the Beast, and I thought it was going to be a fair trade-off, but Marshawn Lynch wasn't even in the movie. Can you believe that garbage?
No, I would have expected him in there, but it does sound like he's going to be suiting up for the Vegas Raiders sometime soon, so that's pretty interesting news in itself.
Yeah, that is very interesting and exciting. I drafted him in one of my MFL 10 drafts just in case he signed, so you know, getting a guy like that in the 18th round, I've got a huge advantage right now.
Yeah, I you know, up until his last year, he looked like he still had something in the tank. So we'll see. I'm a bigger baseball guy than a football guy, so I'm not sure exactly how well he'll play in that lineup. But again, the skills still seem to be there. I know he's kind of getting up in age for a running back, but he looked like he could still play to me.
So Chris, before we get into the baseball chatter, where can our listeners find you on Twitter?
Listeners can find me at LooseMoose6. I love to chat with the listeners and the readers on there. If you've got questions after the show or just anything about your league, I'd love to hear from you. It's one of my favorite things to do is just chat baseball.
So Chris, I mentioned the Reds are off to a 7-2 start. Their best start since 1990. Are you buying them as any sort of contender, or is this just kind of like the Phillies last year starting hot?
They look good. I mean, they've got the second best WOBA in baseball. They've got the best ERA in baseball. So to this point, there's nothing fluky about their 7 wins, except that it's baseball and strange things happen over 9-game samples. I think they're getting beat pretty bad right now by the Brewers. Maybe they'll be a hint better than we thought and not actually lose 100 games. But I hate to throw a wet blanket on the season of the Reds fans, but I just don't see them keeping this up.
It's better for them to find it out now before they get to mid-May and they're still in the race and they think they actually have something, then they lose 90 games still. I think this is a really bad team. I mean, you look at their roster, and there's maybe one or two teams that have a worse roster in baseball. Definitely the Padres, and besides that, man, I think it's probably the Reds. There's no way they sustain anything like this.
I agree with you. They're down there.
So they've got this guy, Amir Garrett, who wasn't even supposed to make the rotation out of spring training, but he won himself a job. And he looks like an ace right now. Is he an ace in the making?
I like the way Garrett's gone about attacking hitters. He had serious control issues in the minor leagues across a couple of levels last year. And that's trouble when you consider he doesn't really feature an arsenal that's going to rack up a ton of strikeouts. But in his first couple of starts, he's really pounding the strike zone. He's getting ahead of hitters with a first pitch strike 67% of the time. I don't imagine he's going to maintain a 4.5% walk rate. I know he's not going to hang on to the 182 BABIP. So there's definitely some negative regression coming. It's certainly too early for me to call him an ace in the making, but I do think he can outperform some of his projections. For example, Zips has like a 4.95 ERA the rest of the way. Certainly think he can best that. So he's got my attention. I'll throw him on the watch list and kind of check him out, but he's not someone I'm necessarily targeting anything but deeper leagues or maybe NL onlys at this point.
Yeah, I'm not picking him up either. I mean, you look at this guy in the minor leagues and he doesn't have the best arm in the world. He doesn't have any of the best breaking pitches in the world, but there's something about him that's difficult for minor league batters to hit. And now it's apparent major league batters as well. So he seems like one of these guys that can make a living as maybe a 3 or a 4 starter in the big leagues. And look, right now he's the new thing. He's got a little bit of a deceptive delivery. And so it might take pitchers, it might take hitters 3 or 4 months to figure him out. But when they do, I think he'll go right back to being kind of a mediocre pitcher like everyone expected him to be. And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong because he has looked really good in these first couple starts.
Yeah, he's gotten it done so far, but again, the jury's still out, and I haven't seen anything that's making me, you know, run to the waiver wire. I feel like just a small sample size blip right here, and the book will get out on him, and we'll just kind of see what happens over the next 30 starts, assuming he's with the big league club the whole year.
Now, Chris, every day I get a couple dozen emails and tweets in my inbox, and I got several about three pitchers that at the beginning of the season I would have never thought twice about drafting or picking up at some point in the season, because Derek Holland, Mike Leake, and Chase Anderson had a dominant out. They all had dominant outings yesterday. Do you think any of these guys are worth picking up, or are you kind of with me and just thinking, oh, come on, guys, it was just one start, like, chill out, you know, go get Tyler Glass now, even though he was horrible because it was just one start.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you. I don't want any part of Derek Holland. He's got a below average K rate, a bad walk rate. He's propped up by a 147 BABIP right now, despite allowing more hard contact than any point of his career. I mean, that's a small sample too. But
and mustaches aren't a category. So like,
no, they're not.
There's really no point in drafting Derek Holland.
But, you know, he does do a mean Harry Carey impression. I'll give him that. Chase Anderson.
I haven't seen that.
Chase Anderson's a touch intriguing only because the increased cutter usage. He's getting 20% whiffs with that pitch. He's yet to allow a hit with that pitch, but it's still a very small sample. And it's not enough for me to go, oh my God, this was the missing piece. And now Chase Anderson is a stud. He's like Amir Garrett. Maybe I'll toss him on a watch list and see how it goes. But I haven't really seen anything exciting from my perspective. So that leaves Mike Leake as he's the favorite of the trio for me. I'm not really buying into this hot start. There isn't anything to support this mini strikeout surge that he's had. You know, he's a control artist. He's only walked one of the first 53 hitters he's faced this year, and I expect him to post a plus walk rate this season, but he'll probably settle in back around the 2/9 mark. And there's just nothing really there that suggests he's different than the first 7 years of Mike Leake's career. So with him being stingy with the free passes, that makes him a candidate for a solid whip. But those home run problems persisted into his stint with the Giants as well as with the Cardinals last year. So we can't really blame that on the Great American Ballpark anymore. So he is what he is. He's a stable back-end guy. He's definitely got value in certain formats, but he's the same Mike Leake as he's always been to me.
You know, he's got that Mets pitcher's hair going on, though, and that's kind of a new thing. So I'm wondering if there's some magic in there. Like, maybe it's a Ray Searidge thing that he taught everyone on the Mets or something, because he's the only guy that has pitcher magic that I know of.
Yeah, I really want to see someone like Michael Pineda, one of those guys who just can't quite make it click, head over there this year, because that would be something special to see someone like him in particular, you know?
Yeah, there's been plenty of guys who have been disappointments to start their career, and then they turn it around. And I think Pineda is a perfect example of who that could be. I mean, it could still happen with the Yankees this year. He's given up a ton of homers, but that's a horrible park anyway. If you go to Pittsburgh, where home run hitters go to die, I would imagine Michael Pineda would be a solid number two at the worst.
Yeah, he would get away with a lot more of those mistake pitches he makes out in Pittsburgh. That would be something else to see him pitch in PNC.
Now, someone who pitched like a number two last year, but we know him to be an ace, David Price, is going to return soon. What should we expect when he comes back, and who's going to lose their rotation spot?
Well, you know, as far as who gets the boot, we still have a couple of weeks, I think, for that to sort itself out. I think the onus is on Eduardo Rodriguez to force the Red Sox hand, because he appeared to be the odd man out before Price got hurt, and he's not really making a very strong case right now. He took a no decision, but he continued to struggle with his command. I think he's walked seven hitters in just over 10 innings, and the strikeouts are there, but you can't be a left-handed pitcher in Fenway with 6 walks/9 and a flyball heavy profile. That's just not going to work. But, you know, fortunately for Rodriguez owners, Stephen Wright has gotten smacked around in both of his starts this year. If he can't get it straightened out in the next couple of weeks, then maybe he gets jettisoned to the bullpen, and maybe Rodriguez stays in the rotation that way. But I think if they had to make the decision today, I would assume Rodriguez is going back to AAA. As far as Price is concerned, it's kind of impossible to know what we're really going to get. I mean, we've seen guys teeter on the brink of Tommy John before, like a Tanaka, and come back and pitch great. But I'm notoriously conservative when it comes to injured pitchers, unless they can be acquired dirt cheap. And I don't think you get that benefit with Price just based on the name value alone. So I'm not in any sort of rush to go acquire him. I'm assuming if you own him on your team now, then you drafted him. And so with his return nearing, then you're probably going to hang on to him as is. So it's just kind of a wait and see for me. But I'm certainly not in a rush to go try to overpay and grab him because there's no guarantee that thing's going to hold up.
In regards to Rodriguez and Wright, I think it's pretty clear that Rodriguez has a higher upside. But we've also seen him do it in the bullpen, and he was really good in the bullpen. We don't know what Stephen Wright would be there, but he can be an asset to the Red Sox, Eduardo Rodriguez, in the bullpen. So I think he's the candidate to get sent down. And I don't know, maybe they throw him right into the bullpen. They have a nice bullpen already, but Rodriguez makes them, as far as I'm concerned, one of the better bullpens in the league.
He could be a good weapon down there. I agree with you. Stephen Wright would be more of like a long man, I guess. I don't really see him being, you know, playing a prominent role in the bullpen. I just assumed he would go to the pen because I'm assuming with his age, he's out of options, but I'm not really sure about that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, Chris, we're going to do some trivia. You all ready?
Oh, here we go.
Now, what I didn't tell you before the show is that the trivia questions are pop culture. Are you still ready?
Probably not.
I'm just messing. I don't know a single thing about pop culture, and I would not dare let that on my show.
No, I was going to pull my wife in from the other room.
There you go. Okay, so first question, baseball question, of course. Over the past three seasons, one player in the league has a 29.5% line drive rate. By the way, I did not say these are easy. Number two is all the way down at 26.5. So that's the same difference between number one and number two as between number two and 32. So this guy's just dominant. Who is it at the top of that leaderboard? Is it Chase Headley, Freddie Freeman, Joe Mauer still, or Matt Carpenter?
That's got to be Freddie Freeman, right?
You're right. It is, yeah. Freddie Freeman. I'm, you know, all four of those guys, though, are in the top five, believe it or not. Can you believe Joe Mauer is still in the top five?
That's the one I threw away right off the bat. So I'm surprised to hear he's up there.
Headley was the one that really caught my attention. Like, I can't believe this because he bats like 250 every year.
That's true. We were just talking about him, some of my buddies, yesterday or the day before, about a guy who is just sneakily still a good real player. You know, he's kind of fallen off fantasy boards, but he's always, you know, over the last 4 or 5 years, he's up there in total war. I think there was one season that really weights a lot of that, probably about 30% of it, but he is a sneaky, good, real baseball player.
He was so great in that last year with the Padres. Everyone thought when he gets out of that ballpark, he's going to be a superstar. And, you know, he's good, but a lot of people forget about him because that's who he is. That's kind of disappointing.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, next question. You're one for one. You have a chance to become the first expert to ever get the first two questions because these are hard. And this one is kind of relatable. It has to do with things that go into BABIP, okay? Which name does not appear in the top 10 of hard contact percentage over that same period of time, so 3 years? Freddie Freeman, Matt Kemp, Lucas Duda, or Nolan Arenado?
Freeman, I think, is definitely in there. Kemp has been smoking the ball for a couple of years. And Duda, I think, you know, the deal with him has just been staying healthy, but I'm pretty sure he has been hitting the ball well, you know, when he is healthy. Arenado roasts the ball, but he does have, I could see him being the tricky answer here since does have the benefit of Coors Field. So I guess I'll go with Arenado. Maybe I'm outsmarting myself here.
You are amazing. That's incredible. I can't believe you got that one. I thought for sure that would trick you. Okay, so all three of those guys are top 10. And Nolan Arenado is all the way down at 39. I could not believe that.
That part surprises me. I wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah, he's all the way down with like Martin Prado.
Wow.
that just blew my mind. Okay. Yeah. Now we're going to get into the historical trivia. We've got two more questions for you. And the first one, which of the following players has the most multi-strikeout games in his career? Now, you might have saw this on Twitter the other day.
Is it Byron Buxton?
Yes, if he was on the list, you're probably right. Wow. That's sad for me, too,
man.
I don't really want to talk about it.
Hey, I took a shot on him, too. I saw something today. I think he had like 19 strikeouts, and Tony Gwynn had 5 or 6 straight years where he had 19 or less strikeouts in the season.
Oh, wow. So, okay, you already got one of the answers. It's not true. So which one has the most multi-strikeout games in his career? Ted Williams, Wade Boggs, Chris Bryant, or Tony Gwynn?
Oh, man. I'm going to go with Chris Bryant.
Yeah, it is Chris Bryant. And, you know, it's one of those where it's kind of like, okay, it's probably Chris Bryant because why else would he be on this list? But what is he doing? 2 years, and the rest of the guys played like 20 plus, and Chris Bryant has 100 multi-strikeout games. Tony Gwynn's all the way down there at 34, by the way.
That's insane.
Yeah, the other two guys were 81 and 96. Man, to have a hitter like that, do you think anyone will ever be that kind of contact hitter again?
I don't think so, because we've learned so much about the value of extra bases and kind of empty batting average that I just don't think they're going to teach guys to hit like that. You know, Tony Gwynn was fantastic, but as much as we've learned about, you know, hitting 250 with 30 or 35 homers and drawing walks, I mean, that's just a more valuable profile than an empty batting average. So, I mean, there's still going to be guys who are maybe defensive specialists and that's all they can do is smack singles. But just given the fact that that's not going to be the approach that many coaches and hitting coaches take from little league on up, I don't know that we're going to see many more hitters who fit that profile.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, unfortunately, because I don't know. I think that kind of player for baseball would be a lot of fun, and I'd like to see it. Altuve is the closest we have, but he's still striking out like 60 times a season.
Yeah, and roping like 25 bombs.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Okay, final question here, and let's see if you can go 4 for 4. Babe Ruth and Barry Bonds take up the top 6 spots for single season slugging percentage with 3 each, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Who's the number 7 hitter? Jeff Bagwell, Rogers Hornsby, Mark McGwire, or Lou Gehrig?
You know, my brother-in-law, his name's Eli, and we call him the Elias Sports Bureau because he knows everything about the history of baseball. And he was, I don't remember what stats he threw out there recently, but he was basically touting Bagwell's career as one of the more underrated guys, even though I think he's in the Hall of Fame. So I'm going to go with Jeff Bagwell.
You're wrong. I'm sorry, man. You didn't get the perfect trivia. It's Lou Gehrig. And I find this so amazing because it happened in 1927. And as you know, Babe Ruth's 1927 season was one of the best ever. So think about it this way. They've got 2 of the top 7 slugging percentage seasons of all time. That's better than having both Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire in 1998.
Wow. That's
team was so good. And that was in a time when like teams were hitting like 20 homers.
Exactly. Yeah, I think we kind of lose sight of the era too on just what they were doing and how special that was.
Yeah, they totally changed baseball. Those guys were really exciting. All right, Chris, we're heading on over to the listener mailbag, and we've got a couple good ones. If you guys are listening and you want to send in questions for the next listener mailbag, tweet me at Bobby Fantasy Pro, and we're going to get as many of these on here as we can, at least the good ones, the ones that are interesting to talk about for a couple thousand people on a podcast. So make sure they're good and send them to me at Bobby Fantasy Pro on Twitter. Chris, the first question comes to us from Tony in Jersey, and he says, Ken Giles has looked extremely wild. Could you see him losing his job? And which backup would be gifted with all those save opportunities?
You know, someone tweeted his pitch chart a couple of nights ago, and it was just a shotgun blast. He was all over the place. And, you know, it's never good to walk a batter per inning, but a lot of that potential damage can be undone if you strike out 2 batters per inning, and that's exactly what Giles has done so far. So those control issues are definitely worth monitoring. But Luke Gregerson's been even worse than Giles in this, you know, first week and a half or so, and that gives Giles a little bit of leash. I like Will Harris. I like Michael Feliz. But even those guys haven't been as good as what we're used to seeing from them, despite what their ERA suggests. Neither of them are really missing bats. So ultimately, we're talking about roughly a 4-inning sample for each of these guys. I don't think Giles is on the hot seat quite yet. But if you want to handcuff someone to Giles, or if you want to speculate on the next in line, I definitely still think it's Gregerson who's next in line for the Astros.
I think it's Will Harris, but it's really close. They have so many good relievers on that team. And Ken Giles, man, it worries me a little bit. If I was a Ken Giles owner, I would be shopping him around. See if I can still get a real good price on him, because he's making me nervous. And there's a lot of closers that make me nervous. So that's not saying much. But I think right now he's probably valued more on the trade market than he should be. And, you know, whenever I have a player like that, I'm always seeing if I can get a good return for him. Even if that's like 8 players on my team at the same time, I'm always looking to trade if it can help me win a championship. It's what it's all about. So I don't hold anything back. I'm turning over every rock.
Yeah, closers are volatile commodities. So, you know, it's to each their own on how they handle them. Like I said, I wouldn't be panicking quite yet, but I get it, because he does look a little bit off out there.
So the next question comes just from Zach from Michigan. And he's talking about a guy that I really liked in the preseason, but he's kind of got a point as far as I'm concerned. He wants to know, Domingo Santana is staring at him on the waiver wire, but does it make sense to add a guy who's amazing against lefties, but just so-so against righties?
I haven't looked into Santana's splits yet, so I notice he's been in the lineup pretty much every night so far this year, and so maybe they've just faced a bunch of lefties. But in the case, if that's not the case, I really like the improved approach at the plate from Santana. He's cut his chase rate down to 17%, which is top 15 in baseball right now. He's improved his contact rate by 10%. Both of those would go a long way in curbing those strikeout problems. And if those plate discipline gains are real, and those are the first stats to stabilize, then we could be left with a 25 homer bat who isn't nearly the batting average liability that most of us expected him to be. So, I mean, it's hard to say, yes, you should add him without knowing who you're dropping to acquire him, but his stock is definitely up in my eyes, and I wouldn't mind owning him.
Domingo Santana is a big dude, and he hits the ball so hard. I don't care if he's facing a lefty or if he's facing a righty. He's extremely underrated at this point still. I think he's going to hit 30 homers this season. I think he's going to hit 30 homers most seasons. I think he's going to bat 260 to 280 most seasons. And that's a good fantasy player. I don't care if it comes against lefties. I don't care if it comes against righties. You said so-so against righties. So-so is good enough to be drafted in fantasy baseball. And you get the amazing against lefties. I'm all over Domingo Santana still.
Yeah, he's hit 3 fly balls so far and 2 of them went over the fence. So
yeah.
Small sample, sure, but he does hit the ball very hard.
Yeah, I'll say this. If Domingo Santana is still in your waiver wire, either you play in a very small league or you need to go scoop him up right now. And I mean right now, because he's going to be very good this year. And look, every single one of his underlying stats suggests that he was going to bounce back in a big way this season. And I think it's happening right now. And if you're playing DFS, anytime he's facing a lefty, please plug him in at $2,500 on FanDuel. It is you are really hurting yourself if you don't do that.
Don't tell people that.
There you go. Same with Wilmer Flores, man. I start him every single night against lefties. A lot of people don't realize this, but there were 3 people with an OPS over 1,000 against lefties last year who had over 100 plate appearances, and Wilmer Flores was one of them.
If that was one of your trivia questions, I would not have gotten that right.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that, but man, he was really good against lefties last year. And that's the type of thing that even if it drops 20%, we're still talking about a guy who's starting DFS at $2,200.
Yep.
Will from Ohio wants to know about Michael Lorenzen. He's been stellar out of the pen. Is there any chance the Reds stick him back in the rotation sometime soon?
I don't think so. You know, the Reds put him down in the bullpen for a reason, whatever that may
be. He's great there, isn't he?
He's been really good, but I'm just not convinced that 6 good relief innings are going to flip the script on whatever the Reds were thinking when they put him down there. I don't imagine Bronson Arroyo is going to last long. I think he gave up a couple of homers. But they also have Cody Reed down in the pen, who I thought should have made the rotation out of camp. You know, guys get hurt. Rookie Davis might struggle. Amir Garrett might struggle. Scott Feldman. So I wouldn't rule Lorenzen out of a return, you know, to the rotation eventually, but I don't think it's happening anytime soon unless a lot of those guys really fall apart.
You look at what he did last year when he was in the bullpen, 50 innings, 48 strikeouts. So that's pretty good. 2.88 ERA, 41 hits. And then you look at what he did when he was in the rotation, 5.4 ERA. He was giving up like 11 hits per 9 innings, lots of home runs. He just belongs in the bullpen, and maybe they do give him another chance. A lot of times you'll see the guy, you know, struggle in the starting rotation. Not a lot of times, but it has happened several times. They go to the bullpen, they come back up, and they're significantly better. But I just see this guy being really good in the bullpen and sticking around there and them using him as a pinch hitter more. Now, Chris, we've got 2 more questions, and this one comes just from Matt in Illinois, who I've got several questions from him. They were all based around the Cubs, so I'm assuming he's a Cubs fan. Congrats, Matt. And you guys are going to lose this year, hopefully. But he's got a point here. They've got so much talent in the minor leagues coming up, especially right there in AAA. They've got 2 guys just shredding the ball right now. And his question is, Cody Bellinger, for those of you who don't know, first baseman, outfielder for the Dodgers. Ian Happ, he's a second baseman and outfielder for the Cubs. And Franklin Barreto, he's a shortstop, maybe a second baseman, maybe an outfielder for the Oakland A's. They're playing him all over the place because, you know, they're going to get him in the lineup one way or another. He says all 3 of these guys are tearing up AAA. Are any of them going to be called up anytime soon? And what should we expect from them when they are called up?
I think Ian Happ is probably the furthest away from the big leagues. And that's not a knock on his talent. The Cubs are just so loaded. They have no need for him. They have no place to put him. And there's really no mess.
I actually think he's the most polished of all of them. He dominated the Arizona Fall League. He dominated spring training. He's dominating AAA right now. Cody Bellinger is really young. Franklin Barreto is really, actually, I think Happ is the oldest of them. But you're right. Like, how are the Cubs going to squeeze him into their lineup?
Yeah, and that's my point. I didn't mean furthest away as far as development. I just meant you know, they're a team that struggles to find at bats for guys like Javi Baez. So where does Ian Happ plug in there. You know, so I don't see a point in messing with his development to let him waste away on the big league bench. So
yeah,
in redraft leagues, I don't know that we're going to see him before September, barring a complete onslaught of injuries. And even then, it probably won't be in a full-time role. So he's not someone that's really on my radar for this season.
Now, I'll say this about Ian Happ. If he does get called up to the major leagues and he struggles even a little bit, his trade value plummets a ton. If he keeps batting 340 with tons of power in AAA, you know what? They can trade him as the main part of a deal for Jose Quintana when one of their pitchers goes down inevitably. So I think that's probably what's going to happen with him. I would not add him in a fantasy baseball league unless it's Dynasty. And I think he's a pretty good add, but I don't even have him in my top 40 prospects at this point because his ceiling is just kind of limited. He's pretty polished, but there's no direct path for him right now as far as I'm concerned.
Right. And when you look over to Cody Bellinger, you know, I think his ETA hinges entirely on the production and the health of Adrian Gonzalez. And because there's really nowhere, like with Happ, there's nowhere really for him to slot into that lineup. And I'm not an Adrian Gonzalez fan, but he is a leader in that clubhouse and he still produces enough to keep his job. So, you know, if he gets hurt, then maybe Bellinger comes up and he might rake right away. But I think it's going to take an injury to Gonzalez because I believe he'll hit enough to hold off Bellinger for this year. I'm not too familiar with his defense and whether or not he actually has the chops for the outfield. If so, maybe that's another path for him. But I thought he was more of a first baseman defensively.
Yeah, he is more of a first baseman defensively. He might win a gold glove there someday. He's a very good athlete. He can play in outfield. And the only way he gets on the big league roster is if someone gets hurt or if Andrew Tolles slips up. And look, Tolles, you can say what you want about his upside, but he's been a very consistent minor league player. He's polished. He's ready to hit in the big leagues right now, and we're seeing that a little bit right now. So I think he sticks around, and Bellinger, they're going to keep him in the minors, let him develop. I mean, he's still just, what, 20, 21 years old? This is going to be a superstar one day. He could hit 50 homers in the major leagues, maybe more. He has a ton of power. And when he gets called up, even with him being so young, he's going to rake right from the beginning, but he's not going to be called up. So I'm not adding him. If he does get called up, add him immediately. I don't say that about rookies very often, but this guy has a really special bat. What do you think about Barreto?
I think Barreto of the three has the biggest opportunity to contribute this year, and that's just because yep. Trevor Plouffe isn't very good, first of all. You know, if he can't turn it around, they've got a hole at third base, and they could slide Healy over there and plug in someone like Mark Canha at DH, but they might be better off moving Marcus Semien over to third base and calling up Barreto to play short. And this configuration would give them a boost where they need it. They're horrific defensively. I have pretty tempered expectations for rookies. I do for Barreto, but he could be a 10-homer, 30-steal shortstop. And if the A's can stay relevant for a few more weeks, and I think they probably can, then we might see Barreto up as early as next month. So of the three, I'm definitely looking most at Barreto for this year, just based on the opportunity that I think he might have that the other two probably won't get this year.
I wrote about him a little bit this winter. I'm in full agreement with you, okay? I've got my expectations a little bit tempered on him right from the beginning because he hasn't been a tremendous minor league hitter. But if you look at his skill set and everything the scouts are saying, if you watch the tape on him, he screams Derek Jeter to me. He has the same exact skill set. He can put up the same type of stats. He can be the same leader in a clubhouse. He's got a very likable personality. I think he can be a star for baseball. Now in Oakland, that's not going to happen. But when he gets called up, he's going to turn some heads, but I don't think he's going to hit immediately. So he's another guy. I'm still not adding him in fantasy, but if he starts to hit when he gets called up, yeah, add him immediately because this is a guy who one day will win a batting title. You can mark my words. It's going to happen at some point in his career, and he might just hit 15, 20 homers and steal 25, 30 bases too. It's not going to happen immediately, but this is a very good young player. If he's not owned in a dynasty league, now is the time to add him. All right, Christian, we got one more question. This comes from Brad in California, and he wants to know what the next innovation in baseball managing is going to be. Is it going to be like someone sticking four men in an outfield? I read an article about that the other day, by the way, and it was really interesting. Or maybe using a loogie and a roogie. For those of you who don't know, a loogie is a lefty, one-out only guy. So he faces only one left-handed batter, and it's his job to get him out, and then they yank him. So if you use a loogie and a roogie back-to-back and then put the other one at first base, you can just keep switching them if the other woman learns how to play defense at first base. I would love to see that, but I don't think anyone has the courage to do it. And then the last idea he had is that someone would be brave enough to use a super bullpen with no starting pitchers. Just go, you know, one inning at a time for all these guys. Do you think any of these could happen or something else, Chris?
I think a few things could happen. I kind of have two answers to this. My second one is kind of along the lines of that Loogie and Roogie and kind of swapping guys back and forth. My first answer is, I mean, no, I don't think we're going to see teams just ditch starting pitchers altogether, but I think we are seeing an evolution in the bullpen. I think we're definitely witnessing a shift in bullpen roles, and maybe evolution is the wrong word because we're actually kind of reverting back to how relievers used to be utilized. I think that Francona and the way he deployed Andrew Miller last year, especially in the playoffs, demonstrated the value in using your bullpen ace in the highest leverage spots. And more teams, including my Angels, appear to be going that direction this year. And that's very frustrating for fantasy owners, especially guys like me and you who love Cam Bedrosian this year. But as an Angels fan, it's a breath of fresh air to see an old school guy like Mike Socha breaking the mold and using his bullpen ace during the tipping point of the game, even if that's in the seventh inning. You know, and I also think we're going to see guys used in more stretched out roles, the way we're seeing David Phelps used for a couple innings at a time out in Miami, the way Davinsky's being used in Houston makes him a real weapon. But if you're asking for what's on the horizon, I think we're going to see legitimate two-way players that will be quite useful, especially in the National League. And I'm not talking about pitchers who can hit a little bit like Madison Bumgarner. As fun as it is to watch him blast homers, he's actually not a very good major league hitter. Instead, I think we're going to see guys who can handle the bat and can play defense, whether it be a fourth outfield type or maybe even a true Swiss Army knife, kind of like a Ben Zobrist, but also guys who can run it up in the low to mid 90s on the mound and get you three or even six outs when you need them. And Bobby, for you, I mean, look no further than your Cardinals and what might have come of Jordan Schaefer had he not blown out his elbow this spring. You know, he converted to a pitcher last year and he posted a 3.15 ERA in Double A with the Dodgers with about 10 strikeouts per nine. And he could have been a guy for the Cardinals who might have been an ample loogie. He could also steal a base as a pinch runner. He could enter the game as a defensive replacement or even pinch hitter. And so you just imagine the flexibility that offers Mike Matheny. And I'm not surprised.
Saving a roster spot.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not surprised to see the Cardinals, being a savvy organization, experimenting with a player like that, because you can essentially run out a 26-man roster if you find the right guy. And I think we'll see more of that in the near future. And, you know, I grew up in Orange County going to Cal State Fullerton games in the mid 90s when they were perennial national championship contenders. My favorite player was Mark Kotze because he played center field. He hit in the middle of the order and then he came in the ninth inning and he closed it out and it was awesome.
That's awesome.
It was. And I think it'll take a special player, maybe like Ohtani coming over from Japan, to play as prominent of a two-way role as Mark Kotze did in college. That's a completely different game. But I can definitely see a lesser role where a guy serves, as I mentioned, like the 25th and essentially 26th man on the roster. And that's a big bonus. That's a nice advantage, especially in the National League.
We talked about Lorenzen and his bat earlier. He was a great college hitter as well. Every single year in the first round, there's 4 to 7 guys who are drafted, and they don't know if they're going to turn them into a hitter or a pitcher. Now, obviously, the major league team that drafts him knows, but, you know, like Jake Odorizzi, for instance, was a very good shortstop, a power hitter, and a lot of teams liked him more as a hitter when he was coming out of high school. But the Brewers turned him into a pitcher, and that's what he ended up being. But you know what? If he would have focused on hitting, being a first-round pick, which is where he was going to go, look, there's a chance he could have been a very good shortstop or something like that in the major leagues. And it just takes one of these guys like Ohtani changing the method that people look at these two-way players. And then all of a sudden, maybe they start developing these 5 to 7, you know, both-way players into both-way major league players as well. And that would be really fun to see. I'm not so sure that's around the corner, but I'd love to see it. Now, the one thing that I think is going to happen, I'm not sure if this is really an innovation. It's more of a just kind of a cheat code as far as I'm concerned. It's what they're doing in the NBA, where you see Greg Popovich and Brad Stevens resting their best players against really good teams. We saw this yesterday with Mike Matheny going up against Max Scherzer, and he was just like, well, chances are we're going to lose this game, so I'm going to rest all my best players. And, you know, our chances of winning go from 30% to about 20%. Rather than doing it against a crummy pitcher, and your chances of winning go from 75% to like 40%. So it makes sense to do it then, and you've got to rest people eventually. But people get really upset when you rest them against Max Scherzer. And guess what? Cardinals beat Max Scherzer yesterday anyway. I think a lot more managers are going to start doing this type of thing, and it's going to annoy people. But you know what? If my team's winning because of it, I'm happy for it.
That's a good call. I could see the value in that, especially against those aces. And, you know, one other name to throw out there as a potential two-way guy. I mean, I don't know that this would come to fruition, but it might surprise you. Mark Trumbo, He's a former team.
Really?
Yes. Mark Trumbo's he was a former teammate of mine many years ago and back in the high school days, and he can bring gas on the mound. I'm telling you, I would not be surprised if he got up on the mound and hit 95.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yep.
That is really funny.
So there you go.
I never would have guessed he would have thrown 95. That's a cool fact, man.
And he's another one of those guys, and the Angels took him. I don't think they really knew what they wanted to do with him. They just knew they had a very talented player that they could, you know, see which way it was going to go.
I think that they probably made the right decision because, boy, he can hit the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Chris. Well, that's all the questions we have for you today. Again, thank you for coming on the show. It was a lot of fun and looking forward to chatting with you next time.
I had fun. Thanks, Bobby.
Our pleasure. For those of you guys listening at home, we've got two more shows coming up next week, so make sure to subscribe on iTunes if you haven't already. And thanks again to the sponsor of today's show, Draft. Make sure to check out their app on Google Play or iTunes. Join me for some drafting fun. It's a blast. You won't regret it. Thanks for listening and enjoy your baseball. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.